It's 8:01, Monday, August the 23rd, and you're listening to WAIF Cincinnati 88.3 FM. Good morning and welcome to the Master Gardener Hour, the shortest hour in radio. This is John Duke. I'll be your host until 9 o'clock. My guest today is Linda Kreidler, renowned radio talk show celebrity, garden designer, and all-around fun person. Amy is here with me again today to join in the gardening talk as my personal expert. And my friend, Master Gardener Bibby Terry, is also with us again to help out in the studio and jump in with the conversation. It should be interesting. WAIF-FM, as a community radio station, serves only to open its airwaves to responsible, divergent points of view. The opinions expressed during the Master Gardener Hour do not reflect the views of WAIF, its staff, or Board of Trustees. The opinions expressed reflect my own views or the views of my guests, which may change at any moment. It's 8:03, and you're listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM, the real stepchild radio, what radio is meant to be. My theme music for the show is Coconuts on the CD Nature's Bounty by Mystical Moods. If you have any comments or suggestions, we invite you to write us at the station. Send your letters to WAIF FM, 1434 East McMillan Avenue, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45206. All right. Good morning, Linda. Welcome back to your radio station.
Good morning. Thank you. Sorry, my voice isn't here yet, but sorry. I can't even talk yet, actually. Thanks for inviting me today. Sure. I've been looking forward to it all week.
Yeah,
I really have.
Good.
I got a lot to talk about and announce. And then you said you had a lot of questions for me,
I'm ready.
Yeah. I'm ready for questions.
Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, John.
Hi, Bibby.
Good morning, John.
Everybody ready to go?
Oh, yeah.
We're ready.
Okay. Linda, why don't you start off by just telling us a little bit about yourself and your background, what you're doing now, what you're involved in.
Well, I'm doing what I've been doing probably for the last 12 years. I'm designing gardens for people. And, I'm always in transition. And that's how I believe a garden is, too. It's always in transition. But right now, for the last 3 months, I've had a wonderful showroom down on 1313 Main Street. Mm-hmm. And it's really an interesting place to be, it's not suburbia anymore. It's, inner city, urban kind of dwellings and situations down there. It's pretty interesting. I don't go down there every day. The showroom is open by appointment. And I'm open every final Friday, which is coming up. That's this Friday is a final Friday. And people aren't, used to or they're not informed about what final Friday is. All the galleries and the activities go on down there starting at 6 o'clock. It's really a nice event. It's been going on for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
I think it took a little dip when the city had their riots, but now it's coming back up again. And I'll tell you, the last final Friday that I was at there, it was just so wonderful. It was even a rainy night, and it was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
When the rain poured down occasionally, people would run inside the buildings, and go to the different galleries. And it was just a really nice group,
It's an interesting area.
Lots and lots of people came. It was like the old days. And I think we're looking forward to having another really good one this Friday.
Well,
so that's what I've been doing there, but I'm still continuing to design and install gardens. I'm going to be doing one in New York City, or not New York City, but New York State.
Uh-huh.
Third week in September, I have to go up and install that. So
that's good.
Exciting.
Yeah. Well, Bibby was down at your shop Saturday, and Amy and I were down there Saturday.
Yes, we were.
And it's amazing, isn't it?
It is.
To pull up in front of 1313 and walk in through Urban Eden and then go back through that beautiful little garden and then find your shop.
Oh, I love the courtyard.
What a treasure. It really is.
Thank you. Julie Fay is the person that owns Urban Eden, and she's had that shop down there for quite some time. And it is. It's like she calls it a little piece of paradise and over the Rhine.
It's really like a little jewel.
It's just really wonderful. It's got some neat stuff in it. And then they gave me the opportunity to renovate that courtyard. And it's really inspired a lot of people downtown to do that because there are so many hidden away spots down there that could be gardened. And actually, we're going to be having a workshop this next Sunday. It's my very first workshop that I'm going to give
down there.
Yes, and if people are interested, they can call me at 624-0333 and register. If they're interested, it's going to be on a type of container gardening that is so perfect for balconies, rooftops, small space gardens such as courtyards, or if you have a small space garden, or if you have just decking and you can't garden, you don't have soil. The container gardens are hypertufa trough gardens.
Oh, yeah.
But these, and a lot of people have had these out for quite some time. They're classic ways to garden. But people are always interested in new forms of what to put in it. And I'm concentrating on this workshop's concentrating on evergreens and things that'll be interesting through the winter. They're not going to just die down with normal perennial stuff. This stuff is going to be up and green.
That's next
and
Sunday.
And interesting, you know, all winter long.
What time?
From 1 to 4.
1 to 4.
And
that
that's 1313 Main Street.
Yeah. Because Amy does a lot of containers.
Yeah.
We've got a number of
All the materials will be there. There is a course fee, and then the materials will be extra because I can't say what people might choose to use. But we've got a wide array of all types of dwarf conifers and all kinds of interesting things.
Oh, you're actually going to put them together?
Yes, we'll be putting them together, and I have wonderful troughs that have been made by an artist named Susan Elsbrock.
Yeah.
And all her things will be down there.
I think
for
she's
purchase.
A master gardener.
Yes, she is. She said she knew you guys.
Yeah.
And I went and picked up van loads yesterday.
Yeah.
And I have more. So, I mean, people can make more than one item, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just a straight course fee. And then they'll have the knowledge and they can know where to come to buy more things, or they can know how to go out and shop for the things that they need for this particular kind of project.
Well, that sounds pretty good. Yeah,
it'll be fine.
It really does.
I'm going to limit it to 10 or 12 people for this first one. And
I think we could sign up right now.
Okay, 624-0333 if you're interested in taking this course. It is kind of short notice, but Sunday will be the day. And Friday you can sign up for it also. If you come to Final Friday at 6 o'clock, it starts at 6 o'clock on Friday night. So it's a big event.
Okay.
Nice.
You mentioned that you had gone down to the zoo.
I didn't get to go.
Oh.
No, I'm very sorry. I didn't give you the wrong information. I had been planning on it, and I didn't get to do it.
We went down there Saturday.
Oh.
And I had been down there because the Master Gardener Association meeting was down there last week.
Yeah.
And Amy wanted to go, so we went back and looked at everything and made a lot of notes and stuff for next year. That is really worth doing.
I bet. I still want to make that. And the annuals will still be blooming now.
I mean, sure.
We've got another month to see that show. But it's like something I've got to do because of my business and just my own personal knowledge.
One of the plants that I've really enjoyed in our garden this year have been the Suncolias.
Oh, with
and
the,
they you, use
yeah.
so many of them. And,
they're
and
so bright.
With the space.
Yeah.
It's just wonderful.
Yeah, because they get
the
quite
color.
Large. They can get huge.
Yes,
one
like
plant
shrub
can
size.
Be monstrous, and I've grown those in the past. As soon as they start hitting the market again and becoming the Suncolias, because coleus have always been available, but they kind of waned in popularity. Mm-hmm. And I remember having one client. I did these beautiful urns with coleus, and these were before the Suncolias came out. And she said, I don't know if I like those. And then, of course, a month after I put them in,
Sun Coleus came.
Because she said, I never liked Coleus. I said, oh, baby, these are nice. And they just look spectacular. And those were the shade type. Now the sun things are out. But when I've grown them, you know, you give them enough space, one plant can be like a three-foot, four-foot spectacular piece in your yard. The one thing I did do that day, I was going to go to the zoo. And instead of doing that, my daughter and I took my dogs and we went across the Purple People Bridge. And you have talked in your shows about the Purple People Bridge because the master gardeners are in charge of those urns there. And so that was nice. That was not the first time I'd been on the bridge, but it was the first time I'd been on it since it was the pedestrian bridge. And it was really fun. It was just an absolutely gorgeous, cool day there.
It was a Sunday morning, early. And Bruce Murray, who's been helping out on the show, talks about it every time he gets a chance.
Oh, it's such a nice thing.
Well, it's really been a wonderful volunteer opportunity for the Master Gardeners, too.
Yeah.
We usually take a week at a time and go down at least. I usually do it with my friend Faye Dupuy, and we go down and a couple of times a week just to do it because it's fun to prune and see. But so many people stop you, and so many people are so nice and are so appreciative of it because it is just a gorgeous place to walk.
Yeah.
The Kentucky side is absolutely drop-dead gorgeous. The Cincinnati side needs a little work.
It's getting
I'm putting
there,
in a plug here, Bruce, because Bruce is really trying to get that path to the Taft ready, and so you'll be able to come across the bridge and walk up to the new Taft.
He talked about that, and he talked about having a couple of master gardeners spaced out through the week to patrol it to see what needs to be done. I think that's great.
We take a note card with us and just write down every single planter that's missing a plant. It tickles me. I think sometimes people want to take one flower or one tuft of a grass and then they pull the whole thing out and they don't know what to do with it. So a lot of times we just find them. Yes, exactly. But for the most part, it's done very well, and the city helps with the watering. But other than that, master gardeners are right back in there. I know when Faye and I did it on a Monday, by the following Saturday when we came back to patrol again, all the things we'd written down had been corrected.
That's great.
So it really works fast. It's a good process.
One thing I think would be really nice to see, and I don't know why Cincinnati doesn't get off their butt and do this, because obviously Newport can without a glitch, but Julie and I have talked about this a lot, and I think the council people, some of them think about this, some of them don't. We ought to get more activities right down there at the foot of the bridge. We could have Barrel House Brewery down there. What a nice location to walk across to from Newport or come back to after your tired walk, wet your whistle with a Barrel House Brewery beer. Something like that on that side of the bridge would be awesome.
Well, the city's gotten real lucky lately.
How do you mean?
I saw on TV that, that Queen City Barrel Fire, the city was within just hours of signing to buy that. Which meant,
to do what with it, though?
Well, I don't know what they were going to do with it, but they were going to buy the property, and as my understanding.
Well,
and so we would have gotten stuck with the bill.
I think that part of the city needs jobs, and I think downtown by the river needs activities and more stuff happening.
It does.
It's crazy.
It really does.
It's so wonderful. I was over in Newport. Oh, I got to talk about this too. WAIF had a benefit over in Newport on Saturday night. I'm trying to remember the name of the place. It's like an old mansion. It's not Mansion Hill. Mansion Hill? I don't think it's Mansion Hill. But anyway, so many bands showed up, and that was really nice for WAIF.
Mm-hmm.
That was just a tremendous thing. It was nice.
Well,
you look over at Cincinnati, and there's some activities, but there's nothing like Newport.
That's true.
It's sad.
That's true. But back to gardening.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about your garden design philosophy.
Oh, okay. Is that it? You're going to drop that on me like that?
Yeah, just like that. Yeah. I could go on for 10 hours on that. Well, let me be a little more specific.
I'll probably have some courses on that.
I've been to a number of garden design classes and stuff. I've never hired a garden designer, but for somebody who wants to design a garden for their yard or their garden or whatever, what's kind of the major advice that you would give them besides hire you?
We've talked
about how to approach it.
Well, you know, it is really important to have somebody help you if you feel like you're butting your head up against the wall on some particular space in your yard that's a problem for you visually. It might be a problem, when I say a problem, it might be just something that you want to make into a more livable space for practical reasons, or you might just want to have it as a themed kind of a little thing that you walk by that's just pure fantasy. It doesn't have to be practical. for maintenance reasons, you would have to even have a... I'm sorry, my voice is going out again. You'd have to have some particular knowledge of plant material and your hardscapes and different technical things, your water and electricity, whatever you might need. And I think a designer, you know, can depends who the designer is, but I think a designer should be able to think on all the different levels of your needs, not just plant material. Obviously, plant material is one of the key elements, but any designer that has hopefully been trained properly can approach a project and see all the needs that you're going to have to fulfill. You know, it is like a multi-level chess game, and it's, to me, that's the biggest challenge. I really enjoy that for myself. As a designer, I love the challenge, you know, and the more unusual the finished product for me, it's more exciting.
Well, I've seen some of your stuff. It's pretty interesting, and I especially like your hardscape that you get into. I don't know where you find that.
I do
stuff.
Love to work. You know, I've had one garden outside on Hyde Park. It, very small amount of garden space. It's almost all hardscape. And but the whole thing is the structure. It's the design. It's the overall room.
How hard is it to extract from your client what their needs are? Get them thinking clearly about, okay, what's the problem you're trying to solve? What do you want to do with the space and whatnot?
My
hunch is a lot of people haven't figured that out.
Well, that's about 50-50.
Is it?
I design for designers. I've designed for landscape designers. I've designed for landscape companies, for their clients. But I have actually been hired by some landscape garden designers to do their jobs. And I'm not going to say who. You know, it was flattering, tremendously flattering to be hired by people like that. But because there are people that I highly respect, you know, so it was pretty cool. And they've been in the business for a while. And they, you know, they know the value of pulling people in for ideas.
Yeah.
See, that's, you know, they have to do it for other people,
that's
too.
Right.
So, and I always like to, you know, confer with friends and a team if I have to. I've got people that I call and subcontract out if I need an engineer or an architect. You know, I've got lots of different people, you know, that I can confer with. And I've got several designer friends that I can call, and we have a, you know, a pretty open relationship where it's not a competition at all. Competition's a good thing sometimes, especially like for the flower shows. But sharing of knowledge is one of the things that any designer knows is a valuable thing. And so I have several designers that I can contact, and I think that's the way people that are hiring a designer for their yard. They have to realize that it's not something they failed at because they have to hire a designer. I mean, it's just, it's the more ideas you can get, the better. And I work my fees several different ways, I think a lot more unusual than landscaping companies might be. I have a fee when you hire me to come as a consultant. I give you 2 or 3 hours of my time, and we sit down, and maybe that's all those people need. That, you know, get them off and running. Sometimes we can make rough sketches there, and that's what they need. Sometimes people need a formal drawing, which I'll do. That formal drawing can be used by them if they're going to put the garden in themselves. They can hire a landscaper, and they can quote from that drawing. Or they can hire me, and I can oversee a concept through installation. But I like to do it that way, you know, then they give me a flat hourly fee and everybody's happy. And some types of companies, you know, like say they'll give you a free design, you know, but of course they're making their markup on the plant material. I don't necessarily mark up the plant material. I would rather just have people pay me to shop for them And really, I've done it many different times, you know. That's got to be the ideal. Well, it's funny.
You get paid for shopping.
Yeah, it is.
I'd love
but
that.
But it comes out exactly, you know, I've done the paperwork and the math on this, mm-hmm. and it's on several occasions I've written down what it would have cost if they would have done it with the markup.
Amy shops.
And what if they would have not just, you know.
Amy shops real cheap.
Well, in the long run, it is, quote, cheap or inexpensive to hire because you're not making mistakes either. You know, I bring the plants back, I can cite them for you, and they can put them in. But getting back to the design philosophy, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, when I interview with a potential client, they're interviewing me, and I'm interviewing them because it's got to be, okay, we have to figure out if we can help each other. I spoke to a woman last week, and I went to her place, and in a sense, you know, there were certain things that I could help her with. And some of the things that she wanted me to help her with, I'm going to refer her to other specialists for. But I'm not going to take on a job that, you know, I'm pretty honest. I'm not going to take on a job if I think there's going to be a problem, and I'll tell the person why there's a problem, you know. So, or we'll go to the right spot to get the information.
Yeah.
So that's my philosophy about business, too. So
maybe this isn't the right question, but do you have some favorite plants that you like to use? I know you have to select plants based on your design criteria. And what you're
I think
to
years
do,
ago, you know, I've been in this business for a long time now, and you know, I always say big blue Liriope is the Linda Craigler plant of the year. I mean, it goes both ways.
Yeah.
In shade, can't hardly kill it. You know, and they're variegated varieties. And then actually, when you start specializing in the Liriopes, there are God, there must be 20 different varieties of that plant. The standard version is the big blue, though, and it's very nice. It gets purple flowers on. So, no, I don't have any special plant. I don't want to have a favorite plant, really, because there's too much out there. There's too much that's introduced each year that's so exciting. If you limit yourself, and the thing is, my garden is a constant changing thing. It's like a cook, you know, like a Betty Crocker test kitchen. And I do have my plants that I love, you know, I love, but they're specific trees and shrubs and plants that I put in years ago, and I just appreciate the form of that particular plant. Witch hazel Deanna's, I've got one in my yard that is just, the form on it is perfect.
We've got a little witch hazel too that we
yeah,
like.
Yeah, I just love that.
I don't
that.
Know what the
and
cultivar
it's
is.
It's particular to the one that I have, that particular individual plant.
Yeah.
I think it's a wonderful
Well, you have good experience with a plant, and you tend to get attached to it.
Yeah, I don't use plants that I don't test first.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm constantly...
Well,
and my clients' gardens sometimes are test kitchens, too, but that's after I've done the major design and the backbone. If there are people that I continuously work for, and I do have several people like that, they want me to put in things that are new, and we kind of test things in their spots because mine is only so big.
You know, well, so. we're pretty full too in our garden, but and this question may feel kind of like scraping your fingernails on the blackboard, but the way we tend to design sometimes, rather than getting a piece of paper and doing a design and then putting it in.
Yeah.
Is we'll be out looking around a garden store and we'll see a plant we really like.
Oh, no, that's how I design, too.
And now, where can we put it?
Especially for my shows. But, you know, I'll go out and I'll cruise some of the better nurseries that I know, that I shop at. Mm-hmm. And I will, you know, I will be inspired by what I see there.
Mm-hmm.
And that will help me with the design. I do more of my designing walking around in my head than I do at my drafting table drawing. Mm-hmm. And once I sit down and do that, then it's a fairly quick process. But once I am hired or I have a mission, so to speak, I go out and I do my garden.
Mm-hmm.
I walk around like the plant sales.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm designing. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm designing. And, you know, it's a rare person that I know that's a good designer that just sits down at their board and starts designing.
Yeah,
I mean, they need their inspiration.
I can see it better even if nothing's there. If I'm out in the garden looking,
I like a blank canvas.
Then I can see drawing it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but that makes
sometimes
sense.
Sometimes it's more difficult for me. I've been hired by several people that have spectacular gardens, and they want me to redo their garden. And that's hard because there's a lot of plant material. You don't want to see sacrifice there. You don't rip stuff out just to throw it away. Mm-hmm. I always try to use what is available there for cost reasons and the plant material's reason, you know, just for existing. Mm-hmm. But if the stuff's really a dog, it's in the can, you know, or on the compost pile, or if it's sick, it's out of there or sprayed or whatever there. You know, we're not going to waste our time putting new stuff in when old stuff is sick and it's going to pass it along to the new stuff you put in. I mean, it's crazy.
One of the philosophies I loved that John came back with from Master Gardening was the R&R, the rip out and replace, that just because you plant a plant does not mean that you have to live with it forever if you decide you don't like it.
No, and some people are so guilty about leaving the plant and they're tearing it out. But I'll tell you, if you decide you're going to compost it, which is one of your big things, if you compost a plant, you're giving it a different life. You know, it is like the afterlife, you know. There it goes in the compost pile of compost. You put it on the soil, and it turns into another plant through osmosis and through absorption. And it's like, what more natural thing could you do with it? So yank it. Throw it in the can or in the pile, you know, in the compost can.
After you have a garden and you've been maintaining it for a while, then it seems to me that we look around and we say, well, you know, this area is a weak spot.
Yeah,
we don't like
certainly.
This as much as the other stuff, and and therefore
it gets tiring.
We see how can we tweak it, you know, and so we keep improving little by little.
Yeah, you take small areas, and that's basically what I do. There's this lady I have in Fort Wright. She's got a spectacular garden. She's a great gardener. You know, and she hired me to pull it all together for her husband who's starting to tear his hair out. And you know, it was an interesting experience. We really got a lot accomplished over like 4 months, you know, in and out. And then she'd have, you know, we'd take notes. Mm-hmm. And she would take notes, actually, while I was there. And then she'd have yard guys come in and they'd make the changes. I'd come back the next week. Okay, we're ready for the next round, you know. And that was one of those gardens. It was a more difficult situation for me because it really looked great, but you have to go in there and really...
It's a never-ending process.
Yeah, extend walls, you know, put new pathways in, you know, pull things together so they're not disjointed. And that's a designer. That's what you need a designer for. I mean, it's well worth your money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether you hire me or someone else.
To get
else,
ideas,
you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, my number is 6240333. That's for everything.
Okay.
All-purpose visual consultant.
I know your telephone number by heart.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't ever have to look it up anymore. For those who may not know out there in radio land, Linda had a show last summer called Digging In.
Digging In, Getting Dirty in the Garden.
Yeah, Digging In, Getting Dirty in the Garden.
The full.
And invited Amy and I to come down and talk about daylilies, and we had so much fun, and I just kept coming back, and she taught
John became my assistant.
And taught me how to push all the buttons. And
He has his own show.
Yeah.
And I don't have a show anymore because now...
But you're still involved with WAVE.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm on the Board of Trustees now. So that's why I gave up my program, because I needed to spend more time doing the administration of the station.
Yeah.
So... Can I jump in and just make this announcement really quick? Or do you have a certain time that you want me to do this?
Well, I've got some announcements, too, but we can do that now.
I just want to announce that the 29th annual membership meeting is coming up on Sunday, September 19th at the University of Cincinnati College of Applied Science in the new classroom building auditorium. And that's at 2220 Victory Parkway. We did have our annual meeting there last year, but this is in the new facility there. And you can use the parking lot in the back, and there's stairs, and there's an elevator to get up to the new auditorium. So bring your photo ID and your personal WAVE membership card,
if
you want to vote, you've got to be a member. Mm-hmm. And the cutoff date for membership was the 20th. So everybody that's got their stuff in and postmarked the 20th, they're members, they can vote. But that is the September 19th annual membership meeting. And it's real important for everybody to come. We've got a lot of members now, and I really would love to hear more people saying that they would help WAVE run. You know, we need more people to help it run.
I mean,
other than programmers. We
went
need
to the meeting last year,
people.
And it's a lot of fun.
It was great food, too.
Yeah, it was. Great food.
Thank you for letting me do that.
Okay. Let's see, it's 8:31, and you're listening to the Master Gardener Hour, the shortest hour in radio, with your host John Duke and my guest Linda Kreidler, Amy, and Bibby Terry on WAIF Cincinnati 88.3 FM. You can listen to the Master Gardener Hour here every Monday this summer from 8 to 9, and I think it's probably time to put the Bibby Show on.
Oh,
some
yes.
Information.
This is so good. John picks such wonderful public service announcements for me to read that I always like these because...
Amy picked them.
Thanks, Amy.
You're welcome.
I noticed that we're doing another bluegrass one, so I figured you might have a hand in this. The first one is about Bicentennial Commons, and if you haven't been there, you need to go because Bicentennial Commons is just an absolutely beautiful 22-acre riverfront recreation area. It includes lighted tennis and volleyball courts, a play area for children, fitness area, and a skating rink. And concerts are scheduled there all during the summer months. And so it's a really a great place for the whole family. And for information on the concerts and on all of the recreational areas, you can call 352-6316. Again, that's 352-6316 for information about Bicentennial Commons. And in that same light, if you are interested in Contemporary Art Center, whether you're an experienced art person or a curious novice, you can discover one of the first contemporary art museums of its kind in the country, right here in Cincinnati, the Contemporary Art Center. Now is the perfect time to become a member. You can check out their website at www.spiral.org to find all the details of their complete season. Or, here's another number for you, you can call 721-0390 to obtain more information about membership. Again, that's the Contemporary Art Center. We are so lucky to have that right here in Cincinnati, and it's a perfect time to check it out. Now, here's our annual weekly bluegrass one. We're kind of into this, and I'm excited about this because we're having our son's getting married this weekend coming up, and we're having a big North Carolina barbecue for the rehearsal dinner, and we've just hired a bluegrass band.
What fun.
Yeah, I think it's going to be terrific. Of course, it's in Wilmington, North Carolina, so we can't use Gene's bluegrass breakdown, but if it's Saturday and it's 6 a.m. and you're awake, tune into Gene's Bluegrass Breakdown with your host, Gene. Gee, that makes sense. He plays the best of bluegrass, some old, some new, and some gospel, too. Hear the latest from national and local bands, and dial in to find out the dates of upcoming festivals, and please tell your friends about Gene's Bluegrass Breakdown here at WAIF Cincinnati. That's 6 a.m. on Saturday morning. And, John, can I do one more real quick?
Sure.
Only
sure.
Because Julie was so nice to let me into Urban Eden, into the garden, and into Linda's shop. Actually, the door was open, Linda. But there is a huge sale down at Urban Eden, 25% off, like a lot of Oxford Garden teak furniture, the Chelsea Group umbrellas and stands, 20% off Oxford Garden signature special orders, 20% off lots of different rakes and things like that. And I wasn't going to.
Oh, okay.
And also their Felco pruners and saws. So there's a lot on sale down there. It's a wonderful place to go at 1313 Main Street. And you'll get a kick out of it, and you'll get to walk back in the garden also.
And Linda's number is 624-0333.
I didn't have that memorized yet.
That's not the number of Urban Eden. That's my number.
I know. I said it was Linda's number.
Oh, you guys are funny. Well, thanks for giving us a little plug there. That's interesting.
Sure.
Can I say one
little
thing? I really have to apologize. I forgot the name of the place that let us have the waif benefit on Friday, on Saturday evening, and it was the Southgate House over in Newport.
Okay.
So I'm sorry I didn't.
Yeah.
But I pulled it up on my email thing here, and I was reminded of the name. So it was Ross over at the Southgate House that he's the owner. He let us have that benefit.
Okay. Very good. Amy, what did you think of the zoo annual display down there?
Oh, I thought it was fantastic.
What were your favorites? This is what I got to ask you guys. Interview you now.
Well, I have several favorites this year, and I've used some of them. The Suncolias that we've talked about. But there's another plant out, and the zoo used some of this. It's a Mona Lavender Plexanthus. Have you... It's...
I'm speechless. I love that Latin.
I used to have a house plant called Swedish ivy, and I believe the Swedish ivy was a Plexanthus. It was a very easy-to-grow house plant. But this Mona Lavender grows well in shade, fairly heavy shade. It's a dark green, slightly waxy-looking leaf, and it's got a small lavender bloom, and they're blooming now. And it can get quite large, like the sun coleus. Shrubby looking, and it's just great to put in one of those deep shade places that you keep looking and looking and looking for plants to do. But the zoo used that, and their designer, here again, mm-hmm. is just excellent with putting color contrasting and color coordination with the lime green and the coleus and the sweet potato vine, and it was just heaven to walk around and look at everything.
I think my favorite was a scabiola called New Wonder. It's a blue flower, slow growing, and it just glowed even in the sunshine. I mean, it was really neat. And they had it planted in front of some real dark elephant ears. Mm-hmm. And the contrast, the combination was just really great. You could see it way from a distance, you know. Mm-hmm. It really stood out. But they had a lot of neat stuff there. And a lot of good combinations that people could go and get some ideas. It's worth a trip to the zoo. Of course, you can see the animals, too.
Yeah, it's changed over now so much. We used to go see the animals. Now we go see the plant material.
Right.
There. And it's a botanical garden, official one.
Botanical garden.
Yeah.
Well, we took a little detour through the... what do they call it? Not the jungle trail. What is it?
The rainforest.
The rainforest, mm-hmm. Yeah. And this was Saturday afternoon, and they've got these foggers.
Yeah, I've seen
there. So you feel like you're walking through the mist, you know?
Yeah,
you are
so
walking
neat.
Through the
it
mist.
It is. It's very neat.
Yeah. And they've got a lot of animals in there as well as plants. So that was a nice detour.
Mm-hmm. Enjoy that.
Yeah. I think there's another thing that I was impressed with at the zoo, and that is they've got a lot of different cultivars of lantana.
Oh, I love lantana.
And you could compare one cultivar with another and see how it was doing. That's what I like. Mm-hmm. They had one called Patriot Classic Fire Wagon. It was a multicolored lantana, which is what I like about lantana. They had one that is called Lucky Yellow. It's just a plain yellow lantana, but it was a happy plant. I mean, it grows well and was really lush looking, more so than some of the other mm-hmm. Lantanas they had there. But Brian Jorg, I don't know whether you know Brian Jorg. He used to be over at Spring Grove, one of the horticulture guys over there, and he's working at the zoo now. And he took us around when the Master Gardeners went down there for that.
I think it'd be an incredible place to work.
Oh, yeah.
I think it'd be incredible.
Yeah, I think so, too. We got a glimpse of some of, like, the white tigers and the people who work there going in, and it just, I think it'd be fun.
Even if you were a gardener, not just an animal.
Exactly.
I mean, I think a gardening position there would be so nice.
Oh, yes.
Did you see the new baby rhino?
No, not
so
this time,
cute.
But we'll go back.
No, we didn't get into that part of the zoo. We usually do. I don't know why we missed that. We were looking at plants. Yeah. I wanted to ask you about... another kind of a design question.
Okay.
In terms of...
Did I answer the other one?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, there's a lot of different things I said.
Yeah.
And then it's, you know, there's a lot about philosophy. I mean, philosophy is an ongoing...
Yeah. Now, I know you know a lot about plants and hardscape.
Mm-hmm.
What about insects and diseases?
I know some about that. I mean, any gardener learns about that.
Yeah, usually.
And I've been
the
a gardener
way.
All my life.
Yeah.
I do not like to spray chemicals. There are a few that I use, but
yeah.
I don't care for it. the safer products are the ones that I recommend people use.
Safer soap, yeah.
And dormant oil, things like that that aren't terrible.
That aren't going to kill all the good bugs.
Yeah, it's tough, you know. I do recommend, that's one thing that I have a company that I recommend to my clients to use if they've got some major problems and they need a maintenance thing where they come back and they do it a couple times.
Yeah.
I have used chemicals in my career at my clients' wishes, and I wish I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
And actually, I physically put the stuff on, and I wish I hadn't done it for my own sake. But,
well, you're not a licensed...
No, and that was years ago when you didn't have to do that. But I believe... And I fully support the fact that somebody that's spraying anything on your plant material or lawns needs to be certified or licensed.
Yeah.
And I am so against people spraying their lawns. I am very, very, and I have a Xerox sheet that I hand people when I come in that gives a lot of facts, unfortunate, very negative and depressing facts about soft tissue tumors that are prevalent in children and in animals. For people that live in suburbia, like golf course communities, can you imagine the toxicity of the chemical levels and those wonderful, gigantic, big, very, very expensive homes that are built in the middle of golf courses now?
Yeah.
Think of their... Look at the... Terrible stuff.
They don't have kids, though.
Oh, a lot. Well, they may not be able to because they're... You know, but, no, I don't believe that. And it's not a joke. I am very super serious about this. I have lots of friends that have had animals that have developed very serious problems because of that. And the watershed areas in those golf course communities are where all the chemicals are washed down to. Yeah. The animals drink out of it. Your kids play in the grass.
Sure.
It's ridiculous. I hate it. I am very against it.
I'm very organic, too.
You have to be. I mean, this is crazy. And people are building these million-dollar homes in the
middle. I wanted to mention
waste dumps.
One excellent source of information about gardening in general, but especially gardening problems like insects and diseases. Mm-hmm. It's the Buckeye Yard and Garden Line. I don't know whether you're familiar with that. It's BYGL.OSU.EDU. It's an Ohio State thing, and they published this thing. What they do is they get all their experts together on a conference call once a week, and they talk about what's going on and what the problems are around the area, and they document all that and put it on this webpage, and it's really neat. I got on it the other day just to see what was there, and it was fascinating. I don't know whether apparently horse flies are a problem. Horse flies.
I killed one yesterday.
Did you really?
Got in the car with me.
They're around. There are a lot of them around in some areas, and they tend to like wetter areas. That's where they breed. But the females bite, and according to these folks, they're silent flyers. You can't hear them buzz like most flies. Deer fly, for example, is another problem, but it buzzes.
So maybe that was a deer fly. So, it was about an inch long.
Yeah, they're big.
Nasty.
Oh yeah, they're big.
It was
probably a horse fly.
Very unhappy. It was in my car. So.
Well, BYGL.OSU.EDU said that these horse flies are attracted to dark objects and heat, and they've been seen to chase cars.
Oh, is that bizarre? It's like a dog.
Yeah, and they have a very painful bite, and they recommend using a repellent like DEET, you know, which is one of the better ones for mosquitoes, I know. But they also suggested wearing a blue or orange windmill on your hat. So
that's got to be.
You know those beanies with the
papaya? Yeah, I understand. Isn't that funny?
That just cracked me up.
Hey, it would work. But
keep
boy,
the horse flies
I
away.
I used to have somebody who worked on crew. He wore a hat with an umbrella on top when it rained.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We had somebody.
He's a member of WAIF, actually.
We had somebody come through our garden with a fan on top of their hat.
I've seen that.
Yeah.
I've seen one of those, too.
And the other thing that I thought was interesting is the brown recluse spider. Everybody's heard of that, you know, and everybody's afraid of them. And what they found is a tremendous amount of misdiagnosis. The brown recluse spider is not aggressive at all. And those areas where they're endemic, they did a survey, and they averaged 30 to 45 of them per house. They live indoors, okay? One house had 2,000 of them.
Ew.
If you can imagine that. But
where is
but
that?
in this 4 to 7 year study they did in this areas where they're endemic, not one single person was bitten.
Okay, but where did they find the house with the?
You said 200.
I don't want to go there.
2,000.
Well, I just
Where? What part of the country was that?
Oh, this
here?
Was in Ohio.
Oh God.
This was in Ohio somewhere. I don't know where.
I have a cousin that was bit by one. Jumped down of a wood pile on him.
Bit well, see
one.
That.
I mean, he
unless,
disturbed it.
Unless
you, know,
you see it doing
he
it.
Disturbed it.
Apparently,
got on his arm
awful
and
lot of misdiagnosis. I know somebody who was had a bite on the shoulder, and they're nasty bites. You know, you get a spot about 2 inches that's dead.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people have to have skin grafts.
Yeah.
But apparently, a lot of that stuff is not the brown recluse. It's some other critter.
I don't know.
I thought that was interesting.
That's really interesting because, you know, last week when we had Joe Boggs on,
yeah.
One of the things that he really intended to talk about was the brown recluse, but didn't have time.
I know, we ran out of time. So
but he was saying that, so it doesn't surprise me it showed up on the, you know, on their line this week because he was really interested in the fact that the new research showed they're so non-aggressive. And
yeah.
I think we've all walked around scared to death to put our hands in anything
right.
We couldn't see.
The other thing I thought was interesting was about Japanese beetles. They're around this time of year. And they're especially attracted to certain roses based on the fragrance and the color. And they suggested that, once they start damaging, they do something that attracts more Japanese beetles, so that kind of multiplies. But if you remove the flowers, you won't have any damage. so go ahead and pick all your roses.
I haven't seen one Japanese beetle this year, and it's because of all the grubs were eaten by the...
I think...
The moles.
Moles.
Really went crazy. I haven't seen one bug.
I haven't seen many, and we usually get them on a couple of our plants.
Yeah,
but I haven't seen them this year. It's...
The moles got really, really heavy, and they were eating the grubs for the Japanese beetles, right?
Yeah. Well, they would.
I have not seen one Japanese
beetle. They're after
beetle
the cicadas.
Could we find something that'll eat the moles?
I like them. They aerate the soil.
Oh.
My cats eat the moles, but...
Could they come visit? We've got one as big as a horse, I swear. The backyard's gone.
Well, I just thought I'd mention that. That's a good reference web page for...
Yeah.
Plant problems, and it changes every week, and it's pretty interesting. And those folks really have a lot of good information, although sometimes it's kind of funny. We got just a few minutes left before we have to start winding down, and I've got a few more announcements to make, but I wanted to ask you about barberries. Do you like?
I love barberries.
Do you?
Yeah.
Some people seem to think they're invasive.
I don't believe that.
They haven't been for us. I don't.
I've had several barberry hedges. I don't believe that they sucker badly. They're very prolific. They live a long time if you treat them right. You water them very nicely. When you first put them in, you really have to watch them.
Well, there was an article in Horticulture magazine that talked about barberries and rose glow.
Rosy glow.
Well, it says rose glow
in
the article.
Yeah.
It is probably the same one.
It's a very
but it's a
one.
Prolific reseeder, apparently.
I've never seen that happen.
I'm
not that
I
aware of that or of it being a problem in a garden.
Yeah, well.
I've got a new variety. It's beautiful. It's a pillar barberry.
Oh.
A burgundy red. It's a
pillar.
Tall.
You mean like vertical?
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Form.
I bought, I think, the only one here in Cincinnati.
Oh.
And it was an experiment.
Where did you get it?
I got it out at Kastner's, but they didn't have any more. That was the one.
Oh.
It was an experiment when they brought it in, they said. I think they said they had two, and I bought it, and maybe one other person bought them. But I'm very interested in vertical plant material.
Yeah.
And it's really pretty. I have it tested in my garden, and I let it get too dry a couple times, and since it was the first year, like I said, the first year you really have to get them in there and established, and it dropped some leaves, but it came back.
Mm-hmm.
And I also love the lime color ones.
Oh, yeah.
They aren't that easy to find. They have the yellow gold ones are fairly easy, but the lime ones are not easy to find.
I don't remember where we got ours.
I don't remember
But they've done real well, and
I do love
they're
them.
Not popping up anywhere else in our garden.
Neither are the
problem.
Red ones.
No.
No.
But this article goes on to suggest some alternatives for Barbary and talks about Cotonia aster and some of the dark Weigelias and the boxwood.
Yeah, I'm using more and more boxwood. I'm not using them normally in the old sense, mm-hmm. design-wise,
but
I really like them because they're evergreens.
Yeah.
That's one of the plants that'll be really nice for the containers. I'm using some very small varieties of boxwood for that.
Yeah.
My sister-in-law is down at her garden. I'm helping her put in a rose garden, and she has some wonderful window boxes on their home. It's an older home in Lexington, and she's using the little dwarf boxwoods in the window boxes, and they're just beautiful. And she said, I love the fact they'll stay green all winter, and I love boxwood.
What zone is that down there?
Probably a warmer zone than we are.
Yeah,
they tend
to
come
do
out.
That in Cincinnati with boxwoods, their roots are a little bit more, they don't like to be moved or messed with, and I think the cold in a boxwood would be hard.
We've moved them, and they've done fine.
Well, yeah, but they don't generally, they have a very shallow root system, mm-hmm. and they don't like to be messed with. If you're tilling or anything or cultivating, you need to be careful when you get to the root. Yeah, I've moved them. But wouldn't you say if they were in a window box, you'd need to have some insulation and show some real care here?
We've had them in containers that we actually rooted, and they have spent winters in containers. And
okay. If there's
not up
insulation.
Like a window box, but just sitting out, and they stay.
It would scare me a little bit.
There may be a lot of variation from different cultivars.
Yeah.
Our boxwoods came from Alabama. I don't have any idea what cultivar it was.
Yeah.
Amy's parents gave them to us years ago, and we've taken cuttings. And
truly an heirloom.
Yeah.
Because they were on the farm. When
and it's been tough. We haven't had any trouble rooting them, and I don't think we've lost any once they've gotten established.
Yeah.
So
really
it's a
like
tough
them.
Plant. It's a good plant.
It is a good plant. They are good plants to use in different situations. I mean, some gardens don't call for them. You know, unfortunately, the style's different. You know?
Yeah. Okay. I've got a few upcoming events and opportunities I wanted to mention again. The Northern Kentucky Master Gardener class is going to be on Tuesdays from 9 to 1, starting September the 7th through December the 14th at Campbell County Extension Office. And that number to call and find out more about it is 859-572-2600. And there's going to be a free class on houseplants at Landfair Retirement Community Wednesday, September 15th at 2 p.m. And you can call Nancy at 591-4501 to find out more about that. And the Master Composter classes this fall are going to be starting at the Civic Garden Center on October 2nd. And those are going to be three consecutive Saturdays. So those are things to, and the number there at the Civic Garden Center is 221-0981. Next week, my guests are going to be Master Gardeners Bud Thurman and Crystal Cruzjan to tell us about the Baker Hunt Foundation in Covington, a fascinating place to visit and to volunteer. So tune in next week to hear all about all the kinds of useful and fascinating things about gardening that are going on at Baker Hunt. Have you been there, Bibby?
I have not, and I'm embarrassed, and I'm glad I'm not going to be here next week because that was one of the places I really wanted to volunteer. I'm just so impressed with what they've done over there, and I just have not made it over there
that's
yet.
That's really a neat place. We didn't get to their event they had a few Fridays ago, so
they're
but
doing
it's,
some
it's
wonderful
a neat
things
place.
There.
Yeah.
Not just for gardeners, but children. And
oh, yeah.
They have so many programs. Just a fascinating place.
The whole concept there, apparently, is from the foundation, is free art classes for children. And I think that's...
Just an incredible idea.
Yeah,
it really
is.
And I know they're doing a lot with trying to restore the gardens to period gardens, which I think is also, that's one of the things I'm so interested in. I think that's just fascinating. I'll listen, but I'll be on my way back. You'll have to tape it for me, John, because we'll be on our way back from North Carolina.
Okay. And did you know that WAIF, depends on you, our listeners, for financial support. We're an all-volunteer, nonprofit community radio station. For only $15, you can become a member of WAIF-FM. You can join on the webpage at www.waif883.org. And if you want to listen to previous Master Gardener Hour programs, you can go to the American Compost Society webpage at www.writethisforme.com/ACS and click on the Master Gardener Hour link.
I have to say one thing. Uh-huh. We are going to be getting our live streaming back up in the next, hopefully, 2.5 weeks.
Good.
That has been passed by the board.
That's good.
We'll be up and streaming again.
It won't affect me, but
because how many more programs do you have before the end of the summer season?
Two after this.
Okay.
I think September 6th is our last show.
It's been great.
But I'm burning CDs and sending them to my son in Florida, and
you
put some on the
webpage.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have anything else you want to add last minute?
I just want to say I hope I see a whole bunch of visitors down at Final Friday.
Yeah.
That's 1313 Main Street.
Yeah.
And come on down. The more people, the more fun it is, you know. And I'm going to try to get some live music down there this next Friday.
Okay, good. Yeah. And if you want to talk to Linda, her number is 624-0333.
Thanks.
Okay. Let's see. I guess, Bibby, you have anything else you want to add?
No, I don't think so, John. Thanks. It's been another wonderful Monday morning.
Yeah, okay, good. Glad you all came. Had fun. How'd you feel to be back on the...
Oh, I love it. I do miss it. It's fun working the boards.
Yeah.
You feel very accomplished when you've walked out after a program and you haven't made too many mistakes.
Yeah, you do. You're right about that. I've yet to get that feeling, but... No, you trained me well. You did. You trained me well. And I thought I might just give you just a few minutes before I start my theme song. Let's see if you recognize this one.
I can't hear it. Oh, John, thank you. That does bring back fond memories. John Searcy was the composer of that and singer piece of vocals on that.
Did you ever wonder about this life?
Yeah, that's true.
No known beginning and no end.
Start with Coconuts now with on the CD Nature's Bounty by Mystical Moods. It's 8:58 and you're listening to WAIF Cincinnati 88.3 FM. And this has been the Master Gardener Hour with John Duke. You can listen to the Master Gardener Hour every Monday morning this summer from 8 to 9 a.m. on WAIF Cincinnati 88.3 FM. All we ask is 1 hour a week. Next week, I'll be back on Monday with my guests, Master Gardeners Bud Thurman and Crystal Cruz-Chan from Baker Hunt, so don't miss it. That's only 167 hours from now, so make them count. And stay tuned for One Voice. Take care of yourself. Your garden needs you. And thanks for listening.